Hello, welcome along to a brand new episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This is the only show that uncovers all the secrets of the universe. My name's Dan, thanks for giving us a listen. This week, we're learning about a sea beast that is so terrifying, it sparked many sea monster stories of old. Also, you can hear how many dinosaurs weren't always massive, and I got some of your questions to answer as always. This week, they're about flamingos, watches, and trees. We've had a lot of tree questions on recently. Don't know what's going on, maybe being stuck at home has made you pining for nature and pining for pine trees. I'll answer all of those in just a sec. First, let's catch up with one of our favourite geniuses on the show. This is Professor Hallock's...
Professor Hallock's Digital Dental Depository, with support from Philips Sonicare.
To honour great Uncle Halitosis, dentist extraordinaire, on the occasion of his 100th birthday... Professor Hallock's is creating a pop-up digital dental depository, an oral health help desk. He's going to see how many questions all about teeth he can answer against the clock.
I think the turbine's nearly up to speed. We're going on a historical heist today. Are you ready, Nanobot?
I'm ready, so let's go. First question. How did people in olden times remove really rotten teeth?
Well, back in the mists of time, if a tooth was causing pain, primitive man would simply smash it out with a rock or a mallet. Ancient Chinese dentists trained their fingers to be strong enough to pull the teeth out. Luckily, in more recent times, special instruments were developed. These are much more hygienic, which is important, because for many centuries, infections caused by tooth decay and extraction were a common cause of death.
Another good start, Professor. Right, true or false? In past times, you would go to the barber's if you had a toothache.
That's true. For many years, as well as cutting hair, barbers also performed surgery and would pull out teeth. That's why they have red and white striped poles outside. It's to represent blood and bandages.
Yuck! Here's a less gruesome question. What did people in the past use to clean their teeth?
All sorts of things. Twigs or rags were often used to scrape or wipe teeth. People would also use chalk and brick dust to get rid of any muck. Sometimes they'd mix salt with bicarbonate of soda for a frothy finish. The first mass-produced toothbrushes began to appear in the 1800s, using bristles from pigs. And by the 1880s, tubes of toothpaste were available.
Not sure I like the sound of a piggy toothbrush. Oh, here's a good one. What would you use if you needed false teeth in the past?
Well, some false teeth were made from wood and others were taken from the mouths of the dead. Sometimes teeth came from people who would sell their teeth for money. These days, false teeth are made from very high-tech plastics, which are so realistic, it's impossible to tell they're not the patient's own choppers.
We're racing towards the finish. How long does it take to train to be a dentist today?
Dentists are specially trained to be experts and have to study for as many as 8 years before they can treat patients on their own. And with modern technology in medicines, your local dental surgery is a perfectly pleasant place to be. Not like the 18th century barbershop.
That's correct. And time's up. Brilliant, Professor. Very respectable score there. And lots of data for our digital dental depository.
Professor Hallock's Digital Dental Depository, with support from Philips Sonicare. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallock's.
It's time to answer some of your questions. I love this part of the show. I think it's got to be your favourite part as well, when you send me, because I'm doing all the work for you really, because you send me your questions, you leave them as a review over on Apple Podcasts. I do all the work. I become a science Sherlock trying to get the answers for you. This is from Golden Football Boy 123. He's got an incredible question. Listen to this. If flamingos ate carrots, would they be yellow or orange? I love it. Flamingos are pink, you see, because the algae that they eat is full of pink-red pigments called carotenoids. If they don't eat the right stuff, though, they don't go yellow or pink or really any other colour. They just turn greyer, kind of a boring grey. Here's the twist with this tale, though. Carrots are also full of carotenoids. So in this instance, if a flamingo ate nothing but carrots, I reckon they'd probably still turn pink, because that's what turns them pink anyway. Thanks for that. Also, this is from Louise, who is 12 years old, who asks, why watches tick? What makes the noise? Now, watches tick because they have a bit of engineering in there that helps keep the movement of the hands regular. So it keeps the time well. It works a bit like a pendulum, swinging from side to side, side to side. That's why it ticks. Now, modern watches also tick quite loudly because they're made using cheap parts which aren't fitted that well. So their wobbliness makes them tick. And finally, we're rattling through them today. Megan asks, how long does it take for a tree to grow? Well, Megan, depends what type of tree it is. An average tree that you might have in your back garden could take around 30 years to grow. 30 or 50 years. The tallest tree in the world is a redwood. It's called Hyperion. We've spoken about it recently. It's 115 meters tall. And experts think it could be 700 years old. It's worth remembering as well that trees don't stop growing. They keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So an oak tree that's 50 years old and pretty big is still a baby oak tree compared to one that's 200 years old and massive. There you go. I hope that covers all bases for you, Megan. Thank you so much for the questions. If you've got something sciencey that you want to ask me, you need to leave it as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, while you've been stuck at home, one robot has been working nonstop in the lab. It's a robot scientist with social distancing skills. And Dr. Benjamin Berger from the University of Liverpool can tell us more. Hey, Benjamin.
Hey, Dan.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, just describe to us what the robot looks like, just so we can really get an image in our mind.
It's a big table driving around with four wheels on the bottom that can drive in every direction. So it can drive to the sideways and backwards as well, and then any diagonal direction. And then on top of this is a robotic arm. And this is a special robot arm that is touch sensitive. So it can feel when it touches something.
When did you get the first idea about this, that maybe a robot that you could control could help you during lockdown?
Initially, the project was set out to create a robotic researcher, one that can take away some of my tasks during research. So, and as time developed, once the scientist was kind of driving around to the lab and doing science, it would also be able to do that while we were away, so we'd only have to go into the lab once every 1 or 2 weeks just to refill it with some consumables so the robot could keep working.
So you say you wanted a robot assistant, a researcher, to help you out with your tasks. How independent is the robot? Could you just tell it what to do and it immediately just kind of keeps itself busy or get with a task? Or do you have to tell it each step of the mission that it needs to undertake?
Well, initially, you have to teach the robot how to perform each individual task. For example, how to put a solid in a vial or how to put a cap on top of a sample, or to perform some kind of measurement. But once you've programmed this, you can give the robot a sort of basic goal. For example, use these chemicals to make mixtures and find a mixture that produces a lot of hydrogen, for example. And then the robot can independently start mixing these chemicals and start searching for different mixtures to find a hydrogen-producing mixture.
And how easy do you have to make everything for the robot? If you're saying, mix these chemicals together, will it go off and look in the cupboards and find all the chemicals itself? Or do you have to really lay things out and make it as easy as possible?
The system that we have now requires us to tell beforehand where everything is, where every solid is, where it's placed in a lab, where it can find new vials, and where it can rid of old vials or empty containers or whatever.
Oh, and you say that's what it's working on. That's how it's programmed at the moment. How do you want to develop this in the future? At what stage would it ideally be in a few years' time? How smart do you really want this robot to become, Benjamin?
Right now the robot has very limited intelligence. It only knows about the compound it's currently given. What would be more interesting is if the robot could decide on different different ideas. So for example, if it could actually harvest some chemical knowledge that we've got written down somewhere, I can use that to come up with a new experiment, for example, involving other chemicals, for example, rather than just the 10 that we initially have given it. To make it more aware of the chemistry that it's doing, because right now it's mainly looking at one number, trying to optimize this, but in later stage it might consider more other properties of the compounds involved, maybe how well they mix with water or something else.
And you originally made it to be your researcher and then your assistant, and then we were in lockdown because of COVID-19. How much retraining did your robot need to take so it could work in the lab while you were at home?
Well, all of the experimental steps were all trained beforehand, so we didn't really have to do anything about that. Our main task was to just tell it where the chemicals were that it would use for the next week or 2 weeks.
And what's it been doing every day during lockdown? How has it been keeping itself busy?
For a few weeks, it's been making samples, searching for new catalysts to make fuel from sunlight.
Amazing. Just the idea that this robot's keeping itself doing missions over there is outstanding. I'm going to have to ask you the question, Benjamin, that I ask every robot expert, and you, it's more important than ever because you've designed a robot that can do a lot of stuff while you don't have to be there. Should humans be worried that these robots are going to talk to each other and take over?
Well, at the moment, the robot is simply better at me than at performing these tasks. But at this point in time, the robot is not close to being smart enough to take over my tasks. What currently happens is that I spend a lot less time in the lab, and I spend a lot more time thinking about new problems or new directions for research or innovation.
And humans,
rather than keep filling the same files.
And humans, we tend to get bored, don't we? We tend to get hungry. We need to go to sleep. We need to get off work. How good is the robot at carrying on, just working, just plodding on, doing the tasks?
We recently published some research where the robot has been working for about 8 days, measuring a few hundred samples. And compared to a human, we would not ask a researcher to do a similar experiment because it would involve months of experimentation to do this by hand with the same accuracy or to the same quality of research.
Amazing. What a glimpse into the future. I'm so pleased that you've managed to keep on with your work while you can't properly be at the lab. Benjamin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Dan.
This week on Dangerous Dan, we're talking about a demon of the sea. The Humboldt squid floats around the Pacific Ocean. And to be honest, it looks quite graceful when it floats. They usually grow to 1.5 meters wide. They can be as big as your dad, with tentacles sweeping through the sea all around them. Now, they're known to fishermen as Diablo Rojo, the Red Devil in Spanish, because they flash red and white while they're hunting very quickly. It's very hard for the naked human eye to see it. They've got sharp teeth, sometimes up to 35,000 of them in their jaws. They've even got claws in there as well. They glide in large groups. And their peaceful appearance is deceiving because they're known to be hugely aggressive to humans, attacking divers or fishermen, slashing wetsuits, and they've even been said to drag humans off boats and drown them in the sea. Have you ever heard of the sea monster in old sea dog tales and movies called the Kraken? Experts now think that this Humboldt squid is most likely to be what inspired the Kraken. And if anything is that devastating, deadly and terrifying, it's got to be on our Dangerous Dan list. Now it's time for the last episode of our Thunderbirds Argo Mission to Mars series. For the last few weeks, we have been taken by the Thunderbirds, by KO and Brains from Tracy Island, across the universe to the Red Planet to have a look around Mars. Today, we're headed back and discussing what we've found out.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Thunderbirds are go. Mission to Mars.
I've had a brilliant time here on Tracy Island with you guys, and I'm hoping I can ask just a few more questions before I head back to Fun Kids.
Sure thing.
What's on your mind?
We've got Rosalind the Rover taking samples, right? But she's not coming back to Earth, which means the samples won't be either. So here's my question. Do you think we'll ever touch Martian rock for ourselves?
One day, but probably decades from now, there will be regular manned flights to Mars. That's one way we'll be able to see, touch and feel the Martian landscape for ourselves. But we don't expect to have to wait that long to be able to touch Martian rocks back here on Earth.
It comes back to what we said about the best space exploration being about working together. Check it out.
This is another team of space engineers who are working on another rover. They are scientists from NASA and the European Space Agency. And they're working on a joint mission called the Mars Sample Return Campaign.
That rover looks quite a lot like Rosalind. So does this mean she will have some company up there?
In a way, although they might not cross paths. The idea is that a NASA rover will be able to collect samples and leave them in special canisters on the Martian surface. And then, in a later mission, a European sample fetch rover will collect the canisters and load them onto a Mars ascent vehicle, which will lift off and carry them into orbit around Mars.
The final stage will see a European Earth Return Orbiter capture the basketball-sized sample container orbiting Mars and return it to Earth.
That's a lot of missions. So collecting the samples, that's kind of like a galactic treasure hunt. So cool.
The same team that built Rosalind are working on the retrieval robot.
Almost like a brother or sister.
I don't think robots have brothers or sisters. What do you think, Max? Well, perhaps they do. The plan is that by bringing the samples back to Earth, scientists can perform many more experiments in their own laboratories without having to use robots.
It's exciting to think that in our lifetime, we might be able to see rocks from Mars in museums, even if we don't go to Mars ourselves.
It's not just a case of getting the samples back to Earth.
It is imperative that the returning craft and samples are quarantined. That means kept away from absolutely anything which could contaminate them, or which could be contaminated by the samples.
After all, we don't know everything there is to know about the minerals on Mars. Even the dust on the craft will be carefully collected. Scientists are already agreeing exactly which experiments they will do and how the sample material might be shared. Hey, it looks like we've got an alert. It's John Tracy in Thunderbird 5. I think the tour's going to have to come to a close here, Dan.
Oh, man. It's absolutely fine. I don't want to get in the way of international rescue. Thanks so much for helping me find out about ExoMars.
No problem. Come on, Dan. I'll drop you back off at Fun Kids. Let's grab Thunderbird Shadow. Well, it might be a tough challenge to get samples from Mars back to Earth, but it should be a lot easier to get you back to London.
And now you can share all the things you know with the Fun Kids audience. With so many exciting missions to come, you never know. Perhaps some of them will become space engineers or even the first humans on Mars.
How cool would that be? Just think, they could even do a Fun Kids show from the Red Planet.
Thunderbirds Are Go, Mission to Mars, with support from the UK Space Agency and International Rescue. Find out more at funkidslive.com/space.
Let's crack on with this week's Science in the News. US and European space agencies are about to get a unique view of ice on the North and South Pole. Both of them are lining up two satellites in the sky, which will give them a wide picture of both poles. And it should help give them a much better map of our polar sea ice thickness. Polar sea ice thickness sounds pretty important. Also, even though dinosaurs are thought to have been giant creatures, new research suggests that they may have started out tiny. A new fossil found on Madagascar that lived 237 million years ago was just 10 centimetres tall.
Experts at the moment believed that they were the ancestors of the dinosaurs that we know, and they eventually led to the evolution of the pterosaurs, which are winged reptiles, that ruled the skies. And finally, got some sad news to end. Mystery surrounds the death of hundreds of elephants in Botswana over the last 2 months. Scientists have spotted more than 250 dead elephants since May, and no one knows why. They don't think that it's poachers or lack of water through a drought. They think it might be related to the current COVID-19 pandemic, but they're still unsure. And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. If you've got any science questions that you want answered, you need to leave them for me as a review over on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, you can find some of the amazing podcast series that we've got. You've heard some today. You can catch up on all the Thunderbird ones there, all the Professor Hallux ones. We've got so much there to keep you busy. You can find it on Apple, wherever you get your shows from. They're also on the free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids are a children's radio station from the UK. You can hear us all around the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and at funkidslive.com.